You're listening to the News Project Podcast for the week of May 17th, 2021, brought to you by GNAT TV. This podcast brings you these stories. Rupert wins award for revitalization efforts. Riparian River Management helps Vermont's waterways. The Lions Club holds state convention in Manchester. And the Northshire Bookstore has been sold.
The town of Rupert, like many small Vermont towns, has seen its fortunes ebb and flow over the years. At one time, agriculture and slate mining underpinned the local economy and provided jobs, but in more recent years, it's watched as the population numbers fail to grow and local businesses, like the Sheldon General Store, close their doors. But beginning in 2015, there's been a bit of a turnaround underway, as a small group of local residents, working together with the town select board, began a revitalization effort that's drawn some attention. A town green has been set up next to the former Sheldon store, which has been repurposed into a community center. More improvements for sidewalks and a small shared wastewater system are planned for Rupert. And now, the Vermont Planners Association, a statewide organization of town planners, has recognized the town of Rupert for recent revitalization efforts undertaken by local residents and citizen leaders to restore and elevate Rupert Village as the heart of community life in this rural town. Nominated by the Bennington County Regional Commission, and with support from the Preservation Trust of Vermont, the Vermont Land Trust, and the Vermont Agency of Commerce and Community Development, the project was held up as an example of successful implementation of the town's vision for a vital, walkable, mixed-use area centered on a historic village. Kat Briers, Senior Planner and Community Planning Program Manager with the BCRC, explained what led to the award.
You know, it's just a great example of a smaller, more rural community coming together around village scale planning and investing in a village center. You know, there's so many small and rural towns across Vermont that have seen, you know, over the span of a number of years, the population aging, sometimes, you know, less and less young people and families moving to town. And a lot of them are left with that, seeing it as an intractable problem that, you know, how do you reverse that trend? And Rupert just, you know, through lifting themselves up really and investing in themselves has taken a bunch of actions and made the community more vital through their village center. And you can just look through some of the materials and photos that they have from the activities, workshops that they've organized at their new community center, that they're really bridging, you know, generational gaps, celebrating, you know, all the residents of the community, creating programming that's appealing to everyone, and you know, really provides a model for how those smaller and more rural communities can invest in themselves and, you know, potentially reverse some of those long trends that are pretty common in our rural areas.
Jane Davies and Deb Fuller are two local residents who are part of the revitalization efforts.
I think that for me, it was seeing, having lived in Rupert for a number of years and seeing that gradually there were less and less places to meet up with our neighbors and be able to meet up with our neighbors in a casual situation. 2018, we formed Rupert Village Trust, and that was formed after or as part of having various community meetings around the area at the library and the town hall and various spots around Rupert to talk to people, talk to residents and get their input and feedback. And is this something that you think would be good, or what are your ideas? And just to, you know, talk to people about it. So we got positive feedback. And so that's when we formed Rupert Village Trust, was as part of this. We formed it before we acquired the building. So, and I can't say enough again about Preservation Trust of Vermont. I mean, they're really the ones who showed us that this is a model, that a nonprofit owning the building and providing a space for a small business can provide continuity in a community. that they can, that way, if, I mean, businesses rise and fail for lots of different reasons, but if a local nonprofit owns the building, we can provide some stability within the community to have that space there, that if we have an operator that's there for hopefully many years and is very happy and it works out great, if something changes in that business, we can hopefully evolve into another business that can be there. And it provides the continuity within the community of owning the building by the nonprofit.
I did start because I got involved with the Town Green Project, which is a town project. So it was the select board that proposed that. And I just sort of found myself interested and got on that committee. And then I think that came first, and then we noticed the Sheldon store was an opportunity. And I think one thing was, we had a fairly contentious school vote over the school merger imposed by Act 46. And that really showed me a divide in the town that I hadn't really been aware of. And I know Deb and I kind of got to know each other a little bit around that. We would see each other in the post office once in a while, and or at the farmer's market in Dorset, and we would talk about it. And then also, I live right in the village, and I was noticing from where I live, I could see about half a dozen houses that were on the market that were not selling. And it just seemed like Rupert can just die out now because nobody wants to live here. Nobody wants to move here, or we can see if we can do something about it. And I think the school vote helped put Rupert in the running for places to live in the area. And then there was this building that was about to crumble, and it's right next to the town green. And I didn't feel like putting a lot of effort into the town green if there was going to be this crumbling building. I thought someone ought to do something. Actually, it was, you know, a year or so before that, I started sort of sending it out to people. Hey, here's this real estate listing. Want to move to Rupert and fix up an old building and run a cafe or something? So I had started putting out feelers, and we kind of had to do that. So we did. And I think our first introduction to how you do that was Paul Brune at Preservation Trust. And the whole organization of Preservation Trust has been just immensely helpful. And ACCD, Richard Amore, he had helped us get, he said the first thing you do when you want to save your town is get village center designation. So we got village center designation in the fall of 2017. And it was after that, okay, we got the town green, we got this village center designation, we're going to do something with the store. And so Deb and I seem to be kind of a catalyst for that, although many other people are involved.
And Rupert, like many other Vermont towns, is starting to see an influx of new residents motivated by an alternative to urban life in the year of COVID and the attractions of a rural lifestyle. There's clearly another chapter to the story of Rupert waiting to be written. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. The reach of the Battenkill watershed extends far beyond just the river itself. It draws from numerous tributaries before forming up and evolving into the resource for fish, fowl, and people who like to float, or fish, or simply look at it. Trout Unlimited, a national nonprofit organization dedicated to conserving, protecting, and restoring North America's cold water fisheries and their watersheds, has teamed up with the Bennington County Conservation District and the Battenkill Watershed Alliance to improve the quality of the riverbanks and therefore the streams and waterways themselves along the Battenkill system. Sometimes called streamside or riparian management, the effort includes planting trees in a field in Rupert recently with the help of community volunteers, as well as outreach to property owners whose property borders on or includes part of the watershed to identify, restore, and protect more riparian and in-stream habitat through the project. Jacob Fetterman of Trout Unlimited explained further.
What we're promoting is good stewardship of the stream side or riparian buffer zone of streams, which is really just the adjacent land next to a stream. And when we're thinking of good management for that area, it's essentially to let it do what it naturally would, So behind me, you can see a forest along the stream. And so in a natural environment, it serves a very particular purpose, and that is to shade the stream, filter runoff, and then also under higher flows, it reduces the velocity of the stream. And so those are all functions as trees are alive and standing. And then you also think about when they die, they ultimately will fall down into the stream. And at that point, it is super beneficial to the in-stream environment. So the fish that live there, the insects that live there, they all use that as habitat. And it also then further contributes to the capacity of a stream to kind of trap sediments in its headwaters. And then as you continue to move down, it still serves that function of kind of capturing some of those finer sediments, which ultimately ends up providing some complexity. It's not just all boulders. There's some finer stuff in there as well. And I mentioned insects. That organic material is super critical to these environments where it is forested naturally. And so the ecosystem isn't adapted to sunlight productivity. So primary production could either be from outside of the system, like leaves and wood falling into the stream, then being broken down. Or if you're farther down in a watershed where the stream opens up, it gets a lot wider, you don't have that input from outside of the system where it relies more heavily on sunlight for the like periphyton production, algae, and where that begins to take over at the base of the food chain.
Not far away, in a nearby field, volunteers were planting trees, part of the Forests for Fish project, led by the Bennington County Conservation District. Katie Crumley, district manager of the Bennington County Conservation District, broke it down for us.
We often plant in riparian areas, so next to a stream or river, to help provide some natural cover or shade for the water that helps keep the water temperature cooler. It also helps recruit natural wood, so Jacob will speak to that a bit. But you know, for fish and aquatic habitat, having those natural stems over time fall into the river or stream is really helpful, provides some habitat and cover for the animals, and kind of helps the, I guess, like flow dynamics, right, to have a variety of habitats. But we also like to put buffers on agricultural areas, and this is a hay field here, just to help provide some nutrient and sediment capture before any water goes into the creek. And so in this case, you know, we don't expect a lot of runoff in this particular field, but if this were to be converted to corn down the road, where we'd be spreading manure in the spring, it's really good to have that forested shrubbed buffer to help capture the water and help any nutrients infiltrate into the soil before it reaches the water, because we don't want nitrogen and phosphorus in the water. Those can cause algae to increase. And as the algae decomposes with time, right, it takes oxygen away from the aquatic organisms that we're trying to help. So depending on the size of the farm, they're required to have buffers by state law. It just depends on kind of what their classification is.
For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. The Lions Clubs of Vermont converged on Manchester last weekend, May 7th through 9th, to hold an annual convention, in person this time, just like the good old days. They met at the Equinox Resort for 3 days of socializing, meeting old friends and making new ones, along with the business side of things, which included meetings, presenting awards, planning the coming year's activities, and an appearance by a Lions Club International director, Mark Lyon. Pam Nichols is the district director and a member of the Londonderry Tri-Mountain Club, and she and International Director Lyon talked to us about the convention and what would be going on.
We have them every year. Of course, last year we didn't have one. So we have 2 years of, stuff to do.
The whole International Association has transitioned really well to virtual meetings out of necessity. Not being able to get together in person has been the biggest concern for us, but we found new ways to do that. So technology's been there for us.
So I think every club has been different. The challenge for me has been trying to make sure they're motivated to stay connected, which is difficult when they go, dark. you know, motivating people who aren't meeting or aren't doing anything is kind of difficult, but for the most part, they've been pretty good. I mean, I have 6 clubs that literally I haven't had contact with all year already, really. Mm. So
how do you see the Lions Club emerging out of it? Do you have like a long list of community projects that you want to
get your Well, every Lions or... Club has their projects. You know, you're from Manchester, so you know the train they have here. You know, in Londonderry, we have a duck derby in the summer that we didn't get to do last year. We have, you know, every club is just, we're like all ready to go. And we've had enough.
And in my role with visiting virtually with districts and clubs all over the country, this past year and a half, we've discovered that the clubs have been very, very creative with their fundraising and their community building, just to keep everybody together. What's amazing is that the International Association has actually maintained its membership throughout this whole time. I mean, we're still right around that 1.4 million members around the world, even with COVID being very bad in many parts of the world right now.
I think we're all happy to see each other.
Yeah.
You know, we're all happy to start our meetings again. We're all happy to get out in the community. I mean, we had clubs that did drive-through chicken barbecues. We had clubs do drive-through meat pies. We had clubs that did drive-through strawberry shortcake. We did a lot with my club personally. We've sewed over 6,000 masks and given them away. And that's just the Londonderry Lions Club. But there's people all over the state that have done that. Because when you're a lion and you have a servant heart, you find ways to serve. It doesn't matter if you're locked down or whatever you're doing, you just find a way to serve. It's just in your DNA after a while.
And I think the pandemic has allowed certain members of clubs to take on a different kind of a role. You know, we all have club members that are sit in the back of the room types that don't participate very much. But being in a COVID environment and dealing with things in a virtual manner has allowed a lot of them to reemerge kind of into the light a little bit more. And we've tried to take advantage of their skills and their passion for being a lion and keeping them involved in activities.
One of the things I've been stressing to my members is, okay, if they showed up to a Zoom meeting and you're going back live and they didn't show up to an in-person meeting, you need to Zoom at your meeting. I mean, our meeting tomorrow, we have people here live, but we will be Zooming. Okay. And we will be Facebooking live, both. So, you know, we're doing it all. So every member who wants to can actually be in contact with us.
Okay. A bit of a local touch was provided by the dedication of a special bench in honor of Chop Zoller. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. The Northshire Bookstore, one of the best-known shops in Manchester, and one of the independently owned bookstores which has bucked the trend towards online shopping by celebrating the in-store experience, has been sold. Its sister store in Saratoga Springs, New York, was also part of the sale of the business by the Morrow family, which has owned and operated the bookstore since its beginnings across the street from its present location at the intersection of Main and Bonnet Streets. The sale was announced on April 30th. The new owners are Clark and Lou French, two long-term residents of Manchester, who will be taking the reins of running the iconic bookstore from Chris Morrow, who has been involved with the store full-time since 1998. We had a chance to talk with both Chris Morrow and Clark French since then to learn more about the sale and what the future holds for the bookstore.
Yeah, I guess the main question and the obvious one is what prompted you to sell at this point?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it for 2 or 3 years. You know, it's just it's been time for a change. Is the short version. It can be a stressful job, and you know, the book business has its own joys and difficulties, and you know, I just thought, both personally and for the future of the bookstore, that it was time to get in some fresh blood and you know, a new eye on what operations and some new energy and some new resources to invest in the future of the bookstore. Both. I had started the process before COVID, not long before COVID, but just in terms of putting the financials together and interviewing some business brokers and things like that, just exploring options and having a few conversations. But now I was kind of burnt out coming into COVID and worked harder during the last year plus of COVID than I have my whole life, between all the changes we had to make and the curbside deliveries and the operational changes around the internet, and just trying to manage people's well-being as well as my own, and in two locations, two different states with different rules at different times, and so there was, you know, my experience of COVID was not one of isolation and you know, binge watching Netflix. It was quite a hectic, stressful year. So that, you know, just reinforced the notion that I was ready to move on to something else.
Clark French has been involved in the business and arts scene in Manchester for several years. There were no plans to make any sudden dramatic changes to the bookstore, he told us.
I think it's one of those things where owning a bookstore, if you're a book lover like my wife and I are, it's one of those aspirational dreams that you don't think will ever really come true. And of course, we've been in the community for over 20 years, and we've been longtime admirers and customers of both the North Shore Bookstore, and also over the years, we got to know the Morrow family quite well. And it wasn't a situation where we woke up one day and said, gee, let's go buy the North Shore Bookstore, because that wasn't really, we didn't think that was ever really an option. But over the past year, starting about a year ago, we started kind of having these really organic conversations with the Morrows about what the next step for the North Shore Bookstore was. And after many discussions, and we kind of settled that maybe it would be a good fit for us, as the Morrows were thinking about maybe, you know, passing the torch. And my background, when I was early in my career, I actually was in the retail business, and I had a small chain of retail stores. And then in my 30s and 40s and 50s, I was predominantly a little more entrepreneurial, and I was in the real estate business. But throughout all of that, I have been both an avid reader and a really dedicated book collector. And I have a very large collection of signed first edition books. So going back to mostly modern 20th century lit, going back to the 1920s, I've got Hemingways and Faulkners and Tolkien's, and all the way up through, well, I guess literally yesterday was when I bought my most recent signed book. I mean, for 45 years, the Morrows have run this business and this community center as well as anyone can run it. And for us to come in and say, you know, we think we can do it better is probably a bit arrogant. Importantly, I don't think we would have taken on this important project if it hadn't been for the fact that there are, you know, 50 plus or minus dedicated employees. And many of these employees, they haven't worked there for 5 years or 10 years, although some have. Many have been there for 20 years and even 30 years. And they're not just the best in Manchester or the best in Vermont or Saratoga or New York. These folks are the very best in the industry, and they're respected as such within the industry. They really know how to run a store. What we can best do is support them and give them, you know, leadership and guidance, but it truly is not broken. And what we need to be able to do is just kind of ensure that it survives for two or three more generations.
For many, the main thing is that the bookstore will remain in local hands and will remain the fixture and attraction to Manchester it has been for the past 45 years. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.